Joshua Henson of Chickasaw Nation, University of Oklahoma, presenting Nananolit Ilimai Tana. We're learning from stories, transforming narrative documentation into adult immersion curriculum.
All right. Soshifoit Lokosh, I'll give Naolokano Josh Soshifoit, Elash Kutuma. My name's Josh. In English, in Chickasaw, they call me Lokosh, it means gourd. I'm waving at people I know. Sorry. We have a bunch of Chickasaw folks at the conference. It's good to have them on here. The language, we're a member of the Muskogean language family. We're severely threatened. We have less than 50 speakers. When I started this work in 2007, we had 120. So we lost on average maybe one a month since I started working with our program. With the exception of two people, it's spoken in Oklahoma. There's one speaker in Los Angeles and one speaker that lives near Nashville, Tennessee. We've had a really active revitalization program since 2007, and we've had an active documentation program that I'll talk about in a moment since 2013. It's really a systematic, you know, a more systemic approach to documentation since 2013. So in the talk, I'll talk a little bit about our VERB project, the Chickasaw VERB, about the Chickasha Academy, the intersection of the two. And I'm going to talk more specifically about a narrative that we chose to use in the immersion classroom and about preliminary findings. So the Chickasaw VERB is funded by the National Science Foundation, the Documenting Endangered Languages Project with the University of Texas at Arlington and Chickasaw Nation. My collaborator, Dr. Fitzgerald, is here, and we focus on collecting verbs in paradigms and connected speech, and we have more than 130 narratives that we've collected since 2013. The Chickasha Academy program is what we developed out of our initial experiences with master apprentices designed by Leanne Hinton. We took what we learned from MA and developed it into a full-time language learning program. Two speakers, adult learners, piloted in 2015. They work daily with native speakers, focusing on conversational proficiency in a relatively short period of time. We really were shooting for like 1,000 contact hours a year, but we ended up getting like maybe 600 in the first year. So we're working on getting better. It combines daily immersion with self-study and then grammar-focused activities outside of the immersion hours. So I guess it's really sort of a structured immersion approach. You can't really call it master-apprentice anymore. When graduates graduate from the program, they go on to work full-time in the program. This is something we've seen, and I think other people in master-apprentice experiences will tell you the same thing, that whenever you graduate, if you can't pay your bills with your language, it's really difficult to sustain what you've been able to accomplish. So we went to leadership and said, please give us full-time learners that can pay their bills in the language and then give them a job when they're done. So that's what we've been doing. In our assessments, there was a real disconnect between the way native speakers use features like switch reference, where they're tracking the subject of a particular phrase or phrases, and then discourse markers as they're moving from sort of chunks of information to another. This sort of tension between the way they do it and our learners' frankly inability to do it. So we began to look for these significant features in our narrative corpus. We have over 130, so we could have chosen any number of them, but there was this really funny story about cooking frog legs that we thought would be good to pick for the first go around. So I'll talk about that. Mrs. Boland is a native speaker of Chickasaw. I should have put a photo in here of her. She was born near Cullihoma, which is a traditional area sort of east of Ada, which is south central Oklahoma. Chickasaw settled in Cullihoma within like 6 or 7 years of removal. So 1837, 1838, a community was formed there. So as I mentioned, the narrative was chosen for a couple of reasons. One, Virginia is one of our master speakers. She works with the students on Fridays. The narrative itself is natural and humorous. It's really funny. Even in English, it's pretty funny. It's funnier in Chickasaw, but it's funny in English too. And it contained the features that we were going for, the features that our learners simply were not grasping. So she offered this frog story in one of Dr. Fitzgerald and I's narrative workshops in 2015. She recorded it with a graduate student from UTA, Kimberly Johnson. And Kimberly did the first pass. We work with, in these workshops, we work closely with graduate students to help them sort of hone their ears to accurately transcribe what they're hearing. So she did the first pass, and then I came back through and actually sat down with Mrs. Boland and Colleen, and we finished the second and third passes. And then, of course, we give her an opportunity to clean up the English gloss to make sure she was satisfied. And then what I did was I took this narrative and created leveled versions of the stories. So the three versions of the narrative, the first one is very simple. It's a simple third-person retelling of her first-person narrative. It focuses on the lexical and phonological variation that's in her speech. It's not necessarily represented in the speech of our other masters in the program, our master teachers. The second level focused on the discourse markers and the simplified switch reference features that we were really hoping that our students would get. And then finally, we have the full original narrative with all of the complex language that she gave to us originally. So here is the first one. I'm not going to play all this audio, but this is the simple third-person retelling based on her first-person narrative. And this is one of our learners, Clovis Hamilton. Right here. All right, so that audio is Clovis retelling this section of the story, this lower section, followed by Ofi, who's another one of our learners, asking one of our masters, well, do you say tasatok or tasalitok? There's also some variations in the nouns that Clovis chose to use in his retelling, and I'll get to that in a minute. Here's a showing version one and version two, where we have the addition of these discourse markers and switch reference features that I was talking about. So you have the original, the simplified third-person version at the top. And then what we did was we added things like Chiki Mishash, which means like a long time ago. And then in the bottom you see Hulisapisa Antacha. That means she was at school and the same one I've been talking about, same subject switch reference. Onama means when, so it's already completed. But now we're talking about a different subject. So we added these things, as well as chatok, which is like a past perfective. So when she got there, her father had already killed these frogs. And Mrs. Boland's name is Foshi in Chickasaw. So that's why you see it's referring to a bird, not an actual bird. So here's versions one and two. A little bit more here. Yamimud is another discourse marker. Big level information moving from paragraph to paragraph or sometimes multiple paragraphs. The second line here, Bafama, means when she poked it. Then we're switching to talking about the frog legs. So this is something very challenging for our learners. They can say, she poked it. They jumped. But what they can't say is when she poked it, they jumped. So this is what we were going for here. And then here at the bottom, Foshiet ah tasali oyan iyat aladitogma. So that means like she hollered, she screamed ah when those frog legs jumped. Here's version two and three comparison. So at the top is version two, which is slightly more complex. As I said, it has the discourse marking and the switch references. And then here at the bottom, we have her full narrative that has all of the features that she chose to use in her original retelling. And I have some audio here. This is the full original narrative on the bottom, and then at the top is the second one. So you'll be hearing her telling this version of the story at the bottom.
I'm telling what? pima nona ila mutfut odong pelili cima kila asli chufat mar puti asli pit pafale chikat uyani iye mar halale mahtapa halale na kume kada
She's a good storyteller. She's really funny. She's mid-70s. She's this real conservative church lady that always has her hair up in a nice tight bun. She's a cool lady. I really like her a lot. So moving into time-wise, we're okay. All right. This
is a little extra, actually.
All right, good. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about not so much the narrative itself, but how our learners are using these narratives in their sessions. So this is a vocabulary acquisition. It's a slide from a PowerPoint that Rick Greenwood created. So this sentence would be, Bird's dad a frog had killed. So he creates these really elaborate PowerPoint presentations with the images. And this helps in the early versions of the story, the simple third-person narratives that I talked about, getting our students to focus on acquiring that vocabulary so that when things get complicated, they don't have to worry about what is being talked about. Another thing they do is retell in three persons. So what you see here is the first one is the third person. Bird was young, she was at school. And what they do is they go around this table and everyone takes turns retelling in the different persons. So for example, the second one says, Chihimitatuk, that means you were young like a long time ago, more than a year ago. Holosapasashantatuk, you were at school a long time ago, more than a year ago. And then you have first person singular here at the bottom. Sahimitatuk, I was young a long time ago, more than a year ago. Olasapasa Antalituk, I was at school again a long time ago. And we have the same thing even in more complex situations where they're doing this retell. At this point, they know the underlying structure, the narrative flow. They know what the nouns are, what they're talking about. What they're trying to do is get repetitions on the difference between like I and you and a third person, which is unmarked in Chickasaw. So when the meat was half done, Bird took a fork and she poked the meat. When the meat was half done, you took a fork, which is ishinshcha. So you have the contrast with ish, which is the second person. And then you have cha, which is switch reference, same subject. So you are taking it and you are also doing the poking. And then at the bottom, it's first person singular. So I took it, I poked it. And they'll do this for about 50 minutes at a time, getting repetitions on these critical features that they need to communicate. Here's another one, a circling details Q&A. We stole this from Blaine Ray and Big Slavic, TPRS advocates. You can find about their work online. Repetition of critical question words and story details, including all of these target affixes that I've been talking about. So you have a statement like Foshiat Himidatok, Bird was young, Katat Himidatok, you know, who was young, Foshi. Another example, Chuka Onatok, Hoyani Imani Pali Ukabolitok, she put the frog legs in the hot oil, you know, after she had gotten to her house. So like where did she cook them? She cooked them at the house. So this sort of who, what, when, where, why, how stuff that's so critical, especially for an entry kind of level learner. They're getting repetitions on these circling details. So the theoretical motivations for this approach, we're big fans of Krashen. I mean, comprehensive input, like we set them up so that even though the narrative is increasingly complicated, they know the structure. They can kind of hang on to that even when they're, you know, they're deep otherwise. It's compelling, it matters, they're interested, it matters that they really love Mrs. Boland and they want to, you know, sound good for her. All these things combined so that our approach is both comprehensive and compelling. You know, it's based on our story content, but really the interpersonal relationships that we develop with our speakers are probably the most important part. I mean, when you care about somebody and the messages that they're giving to you, it's much easier to suffer through, you know, 6 to 8 hours of immersion a day. So preliminary results, they have over 100 hours working with levels 1 and 2. They can retell both levels at about 80% accuracy, which is fine. I mean, 80% is pretty solid as far as we're concerned. They've acquired, albeit imperfectly, these features that we've been asking them to use, and they're using them productively in their speech. So one issue is speaker variation. The original narrative, for example, she had hoyani'i, which means like the legs of a bullfrog. And that's actually the frog that we eat. But because of pressure from other speakers, her sort of co-teachers, she later changed it to chonti'iobi, which means like the thighs of a little frog, which we don't eat. So there's some tension between the speakers themselves about what's a proper word for a frog or whatever the case may be. I preferred hoyani because that's the frog legs that we eat, but Mrs. Boland decided after consultation with her co-teachers that she wanted to say chonti. So that's what you heard Clovis saying earlier on. The lexemes changed in other instances, varying from the original narrative. I wasn't overly, you know, married to what I had created, so that didn't bother me. But it did create issues for the learners who have been working, for example, to remember that hoyani is the word for bullfrog. Our other speakers, there's three others, they seemingly subtracted and added affixes like on a day-to-day basis. So like today, that past perfective, abbiciato, like frogs had been killed, was okay. And then tomorrow, it's not okay. We don't say it that way. And it's our job, we just roll with it, you know, they're the bosses. So we learn it all. There is some significant speaker variation, and you heard initially when Ofi was asking Hannah Pittman about to say tasatuk versus tasalituk. In one case, like Hannah doesn't use this remote past tense that I was talking about. She wouldn't say tasalituk. That means a long time ago, she hollered. She just says tasatuk. And the way that they treat that process, which is lead deletion, it varies across speakers, even amongst our core group. So it can create challenges for our learners and confusion. So the next steps, we're working on a level narrative from speaker Luther John. And it's about this man who used to live at Connerville, Oklahoma, who irregularly bathed. So he smelled very strongly. And one day he was walking through town to the store, and this dog, this hound dog that lived near to him, was following him with his nose just right up on his rear, and all the shenanigans that followed. So we're working on that story. Why? Because it's funny. Luther is a new speaker. He replaced one of my longtime mentors. Luther replaced him. My teacher died. Sorry. All right, hopefully you've read this so you know where we're at. We want to address issues from the first story in that we're the core program speakers. We want to focus on those that have little variation. We're not looking to push people's dialects aside, but we have to focus 80% of our energies on getting one good common dialect, and then it's up to us individually to know who we're talking to. There's some variation in their speech, but we're going to defer to Mr. John, and he can decide how he wants to fight it out with the other speakers on a day-to-day basis. Mr. John's handling of rhythmic lengthening, this remote past tense that I was talking about, and Lee deletion is pretty much as described in Dr. Monroe's standard literature, so he doesn't create challenges for our learners. We're looking to create a 12-story curriculum akin to what the Salish School have accomplished. It's really amazing if you follow this link. What they've been able to put together is pretty wild. We're moving towards using it as a leveling tool to create a low-level proficiency second language learner who can automatically sort of plug into immersion. But there's a time in the future where, when we have no more native speakers, that this kind of approach, we really feel like it's working. It's a little slow, but it's definitely working. So as far as documentation for the future and future generations of workers, I mean, documentation could take many forms. But for us, what's critical is the application of this documentation and products in our classroom. We have this hybrid approach where immersion activities are designed around our collective narratives. We're focusing on particular grammatical features underpinning all these phrases. And we do have overt grammatical instruction outside immersion hours. What we're doing, I describe as mediated language change, where we know that languages are messy, just like people, and languages change because that's just what we do. We recognize that they change over time, and we don't want to, it's not that we're opposed to change, we're not purists, but we want to make sure that the critical features that make Chickasaw Chickasaw continue. So in this process of mediated language change, we can choose to combat the losses that are more likely to happen, and we can use these direct applied approaches that balance immersion with, you know, this sort of overt grammatical instruction, to make sure that our kids and our grandkids are speaking a new Chickasaw, no doubt, but a Chickasaw that would be intelligible to our ancestors. So knowledge means all of our speakers. Our academy participants, Dr. Fitzgerald, Dr. Sepien, I don't think Mary Lynn's here, and then of course all of our friends at National Science Foundation who made this possible. Good on time? Okay.
All set.
Time. Sorry I cried.
Questions? Colleen.
Could you talk a little bit about why you maybe picked certain grammatical features rather than others in the levels, and how you would decided to assign them to particular levels?
Well, I mean, I mentioned earlier this sort of the ability for a low-level apprentice to say something like, you know, she poked the meat jumped. What they need, you know, to connect those two things or switch reference. And if as we looked across all of our documentation, there's really probably, other than con, cut, which also has switch reference features, they need most acutely switch reference, like when and if and so forth. So that was just, you know, what, 17 years of hanging out with old folks and thinking about the way they talk, and then listening to our apprentices and saying, oh, they can't do anything like that. And then, you know, we really want to sound like them, so the discourse markers were also something that we wanted to focus on. I've also, you know, I told the apprentices or our students that it also sort of, like when you say something like hatkot or hatkon, which means like, so then, da-da-da-da-da, it sort of gives them some space in their brain to formulate what they're saying next, rather than saying or something like that. So it's like a Chickasaw So I don't know that it was, I wasn't like super egghead about it. I just thought, well, what am I hearing them saying? What do they need to get there? And I don't know that those level versions that I've created were particularly good, but they worked in these initial 100 hours. So we'll see how the next story goes. The stinky guy.
I think I may have missed do this. I think I may have missed what you said about whether the full version of the frog story was told first or whether the other one was.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, whichever one was told second, how did you elicit that other telling? Because I'm working with a bunch of Shoshone stories in a similar way, and I liked your approach to the to the whole situation.
So Mrs. Boland told the frog story in 2015. And we picked it for all the reasons I talked about. And then I just sat down and created the other two versions based on her first person narrative.
Okay.
I didn't elicit anything. I just, as a higher level learner, I just sat down and said, okay, this is describing it in third person and what I think they need. And then I sort of created this hybrid in the middle that incorporated those features.
Okay, yeah, that looked like a really interesting approach because it made it accessible and everything else. Overall, it's really nice to hear what you did.
We're just jacking what the Salish did. We're just doing it in our own way.
I'm sorry, I got here a little late.
Mm-hmm.
So do you guys involve the writing systems along with this, or is it just spoken in an emergent stack?
There's some tension in the community about our standard orthography and our traditional writing system. So, especially when working with our speakers, we really try not to force them to voice their displeasure at this weird writing system that we use. It's really for us, for the younger ones. We use it all the time.
The writing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything I've been showing is the orthography developed by Monroe and Wilmond.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Colleen, you have a follow-up?
Not to over-ask questions, but stepping back from this project a little bit, it seems like an answer to Mariana's question, one of the things you're able to do is utilize your experience as a language learner, as a proficient language learner, and then your on-site context with both the elders and other learners in a way that other language programs might do something similar to you. You know, maybe you could speak a little bit about how second language learners fit into this approach.
This sort of structured.
Yeah.
So it would be really difficult, I think, for a non-community member, a non-language learner, to have these sort of critical insights you need to craft this kind of stuff. Like, you have to be able to speak at to some level. Like, you have to fluently understand what they're saying to you, even if you can't speak as good as they do. You have to understand, in my opinion, some of the underlying grammar, not to communicate, but to craft this sort of approach. We did have success in the traditional master-apprentice approach, but we didn't have success fast enough. We need to accomplish in like 12 to 18 months what formerly took us like 4 years. And then, as I said, of course, now we pay people so that they don't experience a sort of attrition. I'm not quite sure that's what you were going for, but it'd be really hard for a low-level learner to produce this kind of material. Now, just the experience of suffering, you know, for 17 years to try to become a good speaker helps us craft this kind of stuff. Anybody else?
Yeah,